Today's guest on Medio Scientific's The Business of LoRaWAN is Eric Lennington, the founder and CEO of Object Spectrum. Eric has spent decades in telecom and software, and for the past 8 years, he's been all in on LoRaWAN. Not because it's the shiniest or most hyped technology, but because when it comes to solving real-world customer problems, it gets the job done. From monitoring thousands of acres of farmland to managing infrastructure and commercial buildings and vacation homes, Eric and his team have built reliable, scalable systems using LoRaWAN as the backbone. In this episode, we dig into what it means to actually deliver on IoT's promise. Eric walks through how Object Spectrum uses their Prism platform to rapidly build custom solutions, why they chose to invest in LoRaWAN early, and how the maturity of the ecosystem, off-the-shelf devices, stable standards, and active vendor participation makes it the go-to option in most cases. Whether you're a C-suite leader evaluating IoT strategy, an engineer deploying your next project, or a hobbyist tracking LoRaWAN's growth, this conversation cuts through the hype and focuses on what matters, solving the problem in front of you reliably and at scale. This episode is sponsored by the Helium Foundation's IoT Working Group. Helium offers global LoRaWAN coverage that you can use exclusively or roam onto. If you'd like to see if Helium coverage exists near you, check out the links in the show notes. To get started using Helium today, you can sign up for a console account with Medio Scientific at console.medioscientific.com. Now, let's dig into the conversation with Eric Lennington. Eric, thanks so much for making the time to come on the show.
Nick, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm psyched. So I'd heard about Object Spectrum as being a really big LoRaWAN. Can you tell me how big is this thing?
Well, so we started in 2016, which was like right on the cutting edge of when LoRaWAN was first starting to get some traction. And frankly, we really saw it as a really powerful way to connect. At the time, it was mostly agriculture. And of course, the problem you always have with agriculture is it's the middle of nowhere, and there aren't a lot of other options for that. And so that's how we got started in it. We've been doing LoRaWAN, like I said, since that time. Since then, we've gotten into using it for other things like in-building applications. We've got applications that are doing like infrastructure monitoring inside commercial buildings and that sort of thing. We've got some campus applications. We actually run a couple of university campuses, and they use that for everything from keeping track of their, you know, golf carts on campus to students using it for projects and that side thing. So like UT Dallas is one of the first campuses that we deployed, and they use it for air quality monitoring and on and on. So yeah, it's been a good choice. You know, LoRaWAN as an ecosystem, in my mind, is the thing that really makes it stand out. You know, and again, in 2016, there wasn't much of an ecosystem. So it was a little bit of a crystal ball kind of thing, but I'm very glad that we made that choice. And you know, as you probably know, we don't exclusively do LoRaWAN. It's not the answer for all things, okay? But when you have a cluster of devices in a particular area that need to communicate, even if you have cellular or some other connectivity available, it's often still the best way to do it. And I would say, you know, looking back now over the last 8 or 9 years, the big thing that LoRaWAN has going for it is really the ecosystem. In 90%+ of the cases, if we need a device of some kind, we can probably find that LoRaWAN standard within the LoRaWAN ecosystem. Just, you know, as you know, thousands of developers and manufacturers making these devices. And we can't always do that. Sometimes we have to make our own. But a lot of times you can just go and get it. And that to me is the thing that sets it apart. Every once in a while, you probably hear this too. It's like somebody says, oh, well, you know, technology X is better than LoRaWAN for these 5 reasons. And I'm like, I don't care. There's no ecosystem. What are you going to do with that technology?
Yeah.
So in a way, it's kind of a Betamax VHS argument, if you remember that old thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, great, we can talk all day about how Betamax was a better technology, but it didn't really matter because nobody had a Betamax player. And so here we are, you know, with LoRaWAN, there may be better technologies in certain aspects, and that's great. But the ecosystem is really what makes it the go-to technology.
Yeah, so I was just talking with a guy on LinkedIn the other day, and he's like, oh, I've got 40,000 nodes over 300 square kilometers. I think I'm going to go to Myote. He was like, hey, could be super cool. It may or may not be the right application, but man, there sure are a lot of options in LoRaWAN, and
absolutely,
most of the bugs are hammered out.
And you mentioned Myote, you know, and that's obviously one that comes up a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I think you could make the case that from a technical perspective, it has some technical advantages. It came later than LoRaWAN.
Yeah. I would expect it to be better.
Newer things can somehow be better because they learned from the older thing. But here's the point. If this application that you're talking about, if these 40,000 nodes, if he wants to build them and manage them and they are homogenous and he basically wants to run that entire infrastructure, great. Meoti may be the absolute fine answer for that. But in our case, our customers, most of the time, are looking for off-the-shelf solutions. And when we have to build something, which we will, and we do, it's because we cannot find the right option available. And sometimes we'll use LoRaWAN if we build something, and sometimes we won't. But the point is that the LoRaWAN ecosystem gives us that flexibility, and Meoti and none of the others really do.
Yeah. So
Sigfox gave it a good run for a while, but you know that has become very much kind of a proprietary technology now too.
Yeah. Yeah. Horses for courses, I think how the English say it. And then do you guys roam onto other networks or are you only on your own LoRaWAN?
We have done some stuff with what used to be called, what were they called? Netmore has bought everybody
Senate.
Now.
Yeah, Senate was there.
Senate. Yeah, yeah. So we integrated with Senate early on. We're integrated with Helium. So we can do applications on that. You know, whenever you're looking at a deployment architecture and whether it's LoRaWAN or anything else, at 10,000 foot, almost anything will work, okay? But when you get down to the details, you got to really understand what you're doing, okay? And so you think about stuff like Helium, okay? Helium is not good for in-building applications in 99% of the places that you might want to do that. It just doesn't have the penetration. There's not enough infrastructure out there. So it could work for certain things, but if you're going to put, you know, leak detection systems in a skyscraper, it's probably not your best choice, you know?
Yeah, unless you're going to deploy the gateways.
Well, that's exactly right. So then the question becomes, okay, in our particular case, why would we do that? Okay, we run the LoRaWAN network infrastructure already because we need to. And so I could see somebody maybe saying, you know what? I need to do this. I don't want to run the network servers. I don't want to have that infrastructure. So Helium is a reasonable choice.
Yep.
And maybe you could make the case that it's a lower cost option than something like Netmore, et cetera. In our particular case, it doesn't really apply because we already do run the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And frankly, for a lot of stuff, it boils down to high availability. Okay. So like we have an application for a customer that monitors basically infrastructure that is not attended. So think about remote sites and things like that, okay? We typically will use cellular backhaul, but if we're deploying LoRaWAN gateways for local sensor networks, we'll deploy two separate gateways with 100% overlap because we'll put each one on a different cellular network, okay? That's the kind of high availability you can't really get unless you really go build it yourself. For a lot of things like that, I don't want to say we're forced into it, but when you look at the parameters, that's what makes the most sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're running a business and you got to accomplish the client's you got to solve the client's problem. And that's the deal. So that's a nice lead into this Prism thing. Tell me what it is and why'd you build it?
Well, so I've been in the software business my whole life. And prior to starting Object Spectrum, I spent about the prior 15 years in the telecom area. So we went through the whole voice over IP thing and all that evolution, whatnot. And so my view of how things were supposed to work is 99.9% reliability, as they like to say in the telecom world, okay, with the 8.5 minutes of downtime per year. That was the way you did things. And so when I started looking at ways that we could go about building our infrastructure and how we were going to build applications that sat on top of that, that was a huge influence. Is like, I actually didn't really plan to even build Prism. I expected that I would go and find it and license it, and I could not.
that's how the best solutions come around.
I know. And so we said, all right, if we're going to build an infrastructure with a focus on the key things you got to have, high availability, scalability, and security. I mean, those are the foundational aspects of this. We want to find something that is good for the ops team. It's good for the developers and both kinds of developers, front end and back end developers. And I know there's lots of people that are full stack developers, and that's great. But most of the time, you have people that have special talent in one side or the other, right? And so we originally said, all right, we're going to build an infrastructure. We're going to base it on a lot of what I had been exposed to in the telecom world. And in fact, in IoT, it's really quite very similar. Okay, you're dealing with lots of transactions, you're dealing with different protocols and so on and so forth. So it sounds like a very different thing, but it's really not. And so we started with that foundation. And the end result, basically, and a Prism, of course, it's software, so it's continually evolving. We run, if we have a choice in the matter, on AWS, because we like AWS just fine, okay? It's a good platform. We have run on Azure. I think we even have a customer that runs on Google Cloud, and we have a couple of customers that run on their own bare metal. And so we built Prism to be completely infrastructure agnostic. That was a key thing. And in fact, most of our customers, the vast majority, we are hosting their application, and we are hosting that application in an AWS virtual cloud. Good. But we always want to make the option available. And like I said, we have a handful that have taken us up on it. If they say, you know what, for whatever reason, I want to run this on my own, in my own data center, my own infrastructure, they have that capability. So that was one of the key design requirements. The other big deal is we didn't want to have to constantly rewrite the foundational elements to a new application. Okay.
That seems and reasonable. So
we are not a drag and drop application builder. That is not what we do. Okay. In fact, we intentionally decided that that was not what we wanted to have, because those are fine tools and they can be used for a lot of things. But at the end of the day, you are always locked into the vision that the developer of the tool had for what you might do with it. Okay. So we're more of a modular system. We've got the foundational elements that you need to build the actual application. And so we like to say, and of course, it's a rule of thumb, but we like to say that 70% of your application is already written, okay? And maybe it's 60%, maybe it's 80%. But the bottom line is that not only can we use Prism as kind of a secret weapon to rapidly deploying, obviously this is translates to less time and less cost and all those things, but also to a very high degree of customization capability. Because we're not a drag and drop builder, we don't have any designs about what should look and feel like, what the whole user experience should be like, and things like that. So it's an evolving tool. We use it for everything. We have customers that actually write their own software on Prism. And so that's certainly possible too. I'm not going to lie and say there's no learning curve. There is a learning curve.
Yeah, yeah.
And most customers don't want to do that. Most of our customers really rely on us to be their technical back office, basically.
Sure.
And so we do the whole thing turnkey.
What does that look like for maybe a recent new client? You can walk me through kind of what do they come to you with? And then how did you guys solve the problem?
Yeah. So an interesting one, which in some ways doesn't sound like IoT, but it really is. Have you ever been to a restaurant where they have the little kiosks on the table that you can order drinks and pay your bill and stuff like that?
Yep.
Okay. So that company is called Zeosk. And we manage all those devices for them, okay? So those are literally hundreds of thousands of little IoT devices. They're running Android, but they're also running, they've got a credit card reader and RFID chip and Bluetooth communications so they know where they're physically at in the restaurant, different things like that. And all of that, life cycle monitoring, health monitoring of the device, locating the device, remote firmware updates, remote content updates, and things like that. Okay. So they came to us and they said, we have a situation where we've basically outgrown the system that we originally built to manage all these devices. And so they had done a really interesting job. And then, you know, they were using some off-the-shelf software, some commercial software, and some in-house software. And frankly, it had just grown to the point where it was so hard to manage that they knew they needed to do something different. And so that is a particular system where the connectivity is Wi-Fi. It's connectivity Wi-Fi in the restaurant, okay? So we don't actually control the network, which presents some interesting challenges sometimes,
Sure. Okay?
But at the end of the day, those are IoT devices. They're turned on in the morning. They come up. They connect to our cloud. They go through their diagnostics. We can do remote testing and remote diagnostics. And so their support team has access to be able to run various types of, like, you know, speed tests and scan for Wi-Fi networks and all the things that they need to do to support their customers. And so that was a case where we were, again, able to use Prism, both the software of Prism and the infrastructure of Prism, to basically onboard those hundreds of thousands of existing devices in a way that allows them to scale without having to worry about all of the details of managing that back office system.
Oh, super cool. So it ends up being this piece where you, basically the customer comes to you with this problem and you say, hey, it can be Wi-Fi, it can be LoRaWAN, it can be Bluetooth, like whatever.
Absolutely.
We'll do whatever the best thing is for you. And in that case, it was Wi-Fi, but in other cases, it's whatever else it is. Okay, cool.
I would say that is and always was one of the key concepts around Prism. Even though we were doing LoRaWAN actively in that very early stage, we didn't build Prism to be a LoRaWAN-based system.
Right.
So it is, and it can be, but we run cellular, and we run Wi-Fi, and we run Bluetooth, and we even do some satellite. So
yeah, you have to. If you want to serve people, you got to solve their problem. That's the
100%.
Yeah. Dig it. Okay, so we've gone through kind of what it is, what Prism is, and how you guys have gotten into LoRaWAN. I guess we kind of wrap this piece up. It seems like we could talk for hours about the whole thing, but like keep these things short for people to listen and say, okay, that was super cool. I can dig that. What are you super psyched about in the next, let's say, like 6 months to a year, specifically in LoRaWAN with what you guys are doing at Object Spectrum?
Yeah.
If anything.
Well, so I think there's sort of two areas, and one of them is directly LoRaWAN related, and the other one is sort of tangentially LoRaWAN related.
Uh-huh.
So the one that's directly LoRaWAN related is, again, I continue to see more expansion in the LoRaWAN ecosystem. It's a growing, healthy ecosystem. There's new devices coming out all the time. There's new vendors that are entering that market. It's making it, I would say, easier and easier to deploy complex solutions using off-the-shelf hardware, okay? As I mentioned, we do design hardware. Obviously, we don't manufacture anything. We outsource that. But, you know, we will design hardware if we need to. I have a project right now that has to do with rental homes, okay, vacation homes and that type of thing. And so, again, these are typically unattended, or they're attended by third parties, okay?
Yep.
And what do you want to monitor there, okay? You own this property that might be 1,000 miles away. What do you want to monitor? We want to monitor probably water leaks and, you know, is the power on and temperature, you know, and is the air conditioner running properly? Is there a septic tank? You know, how's it doing? So get all these different factors. So far, everything that we are needing to do for this customer is available as an off-the-shelf device in the LoRaWAN.
Oh, super cool. So does that mean you just put a gateway in every house and you're like, hey.
Yes, 100%. 100%. Gateways are inexpensive. Good gateways are inexpensive, okay? One gateway in a typical rental property is going to provide ample coverage for everything inside that rental property. And we're actually choosing to use cellular backhaul, not because there might not be internet access available, but because we don't want to be part of their internet problem if they have an internet problem.
Yeah.
So we are an out-of-band system using multi-carrier cellular.
Okay.
So that's the LoRaWAN specific one. The other that's tangentially related, certainly from a backhaul standpoint, but also one of the vendors is LoRaWAN, and that is low Earth orbit satellite communications. Okay.
Super
so
cool.
Lacuna is the one I'm talking about, obviously. Yep. It is LoRaWAN to space, which is crazy, but very interesting. And then you've got literally 3 or 4 dozen other players that are credible players entering this market. And we've all heard the big names like Skylo and obviously, SpaceX and whatnot, but there's others. Okay. Mirota is one, for example, out of Australia. We've used them using their, I guess they would call it their proprietary system that they've had for years. We've used that for some remote applications, but they're also going into 3G, 4G to the sky type of thing.
Yep.
What we call NTN, non-terrestrial.
Yep. You got to have a cool guy name for it.
Exactly.
You just call it like, oh, it's going up to space.
Yes. And so whether the ultimate technology ends up being LoRaWAN or ends up being a 3G, 4G technology, and to be honest with you, I don't remember exactly which one is being used. I think it might be a version of NB-IoT or something like that. But the bottom line is, what is different about these and all other past and existing satellite is they're standards based. Okay. And I know people will say, well, LoRaWAN is not a standard. Well, yeah, it's a standard as far as I'm concerned, because everybody adheres to it, right?
Yeah.
And certainly all the cellular stuff is standard. That now makes the satellite option not only viable, because we're going to get some competition in the space, okay, but also the ability to not be single source with one vendor. You probably remember Swarm. They got bought by SpaceX. We had done some stuff with Swarm, and Swarm said, okay, we're done and we're not doing this anymore. Yeah. And suddenly you've got a bunch of devices out there that can't talk to you anything. And that's not a fun project that anybody wants. So once you have multiple options in orbit, then you have at least the option to say, hey, we're going to use this technology, and there's three or four or five different vendors that we can use. We're not going to end up with a bunch of remote devices that we can't talk to anymore. So I think that's very exciting. And that is unfolding right now. And a year from now, that whole world is going to look very different than it does today.
Yeah, no, I'm super pumped on the NTN stuff. I was talking to Telemaco from EchoStar a couple shows ago, and I'm working to line up someone from Lacuna. So it's a super exciting part of LoRaWAN. So
I think Lacuna had a launch yesterday, if I remember correct.
Okay. Yeah, right. I'll have to go check them out. So, Eric, thanks so much for making the time. I know you're super busy as a founder and runner of a company. So thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it. Nice talking to you, Nick.
That's it for this episode of The Business of LoRaWAN. I built this for you, so whether you're a business owner, a LoRaWAN professional, or a hobbyist, the intent is to give you great LoRaWAN information. Of course, the best information doesn't come from me, it comes from the conversations we have with the people building and deploying this tech in the real world. And that's where you come in. LoRaWAN is a global patchwork of talent and ideas, and ironically for a globally connected network, most of the brilliant folks working on it aren't connected yet. Help me change that. Introduce me to someone awesome in your network, someone doing meaningful work in LoRaWAN. Or just shoot me a name. I'll take it from there and get them on the show so we can share their work with the world. You can always find me at metsci.show. That's metsci.show. metsci.show. If you want to support the show in other ways, you can subscribe, leave a review, share it with your corner of the world. All of those are super helpful. If you'd like to support financially, you can go to support.metsci.show for both one-time and recurring options. We're also open to sponsors. If your company serves the LoRaWAN community and you want to reach this dedicated audience, let's talk. If you want to try LoRaWAN for yourself, create a Medio Scientific account at console.medioscientific.com and get your first 400 DC for free, which is enough to run a device sending hourly for about a year. This show is supported by a grant from the Helium Foundation and produced by Gristle King, Inc. I'm Nick Hawks. I'll see you on the next show.